Welcome to The Mountain Life. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Mary Beth Maziarz. Today on the show, as part of our Resilient Youth series, focused not only on young people, but also on the families, schools, and communities that surround them, we explore the long shadow trauma can cast over our lives and what it really takes to begin healing. Joining us are therapists James Ott and Nicole Small of Red Willow Counseling and Recovery.
Red Willow, with offices here in Park City as well as in the Salt Lake Valley, is a practice dedicated to helping individuals navigate trauma, addiction, grief, anxiety, and recovery with compassion and evidence-based care. James and Nicole will talk about how trauma shapes the nervous system, relationships, and sense of self, and why healing often begins when people finally feel safe enough to tell the stories they've been carrying alone. James and Nicole, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Well, it's great to have you, especially recognizing May is Mental Health Awareness Month. James, why don't I start with you? As I said in the intro, you have three offices, one in Murray, one in Salt Lake, and now here in Park City. Can you just give us a little background of why you went from maybe your own private practice into various offices?
Well, that's a good question, because I often describe myself as an accidental businessman, because I'm just a therapist and I love to do therapy. And 14 years ago, my practice was just so full, I just couldn't keep up. So I just, on a whim, decided to hire another therapist, and that led to hiring more therapists and more therapists. And we now take on a lot of interns. And with this growth, we have expanded to multiple locations. And so it really is more just good luck and fortitude that's created this expansion.
Right. Well, that gives testament to your skill as a therapist. If you were bursting at the seams with people wanting to get in to see you, and it strikes me that you obviously have therapists that specialize in different areas, and that might be the attractiveness for a patient to choose something like Red Willow, because you know that you can be sort of funneled into the direction of someone who specializes in the thing that you're trying to change in your life.
Exactly. And at Red Willow, I think of therapy, any good therapist has got to have a good foundation of being able to work with depression, anxiety, life transitions, mood disorders. But we really specialize in trauma, in addiction recovery, especially with working with families and with helping the LGBTQ society. And we know that whether you're rich or poor, whether you're an adolescent or elderly person or in between, you're impacted by all of these things. These mental health concerns are not isolated to any population.
Right. You mentioned the LGBTQ community. You built a practice that explicitly welcomes clients in the LGBTQ plus community, and you operate here in Utah, where they're navigating an identity within a really many, many times very religious families and communities. What does it cost a young person to hold both of those identities at the same time? And what does strong clinical support look like when you work with them?
Wow, that's a big question.
It is a big question. Sorry, there's a lot in
no,
that.
No. It's. I mean, just because a member of the LGBTQ community, there's such a wide variation, and there's so many challenges that people face with that. So you probably take the whole podcast on that, and I'm actually probably not the best person to talk about that. Our office in Murray specializes in helping people navigate all these various difficulties. A lot of the therapists that we have in the Murray office are queer themselves, so that not only do they have the knowledge, but also the personal experience to address these issues.
I bet that's very comforting for a lot of families or patients themselves. Yeah.
Yes, very much so. And we really do a lot of collaboration with other practitioners that specialize with the LGBTQ community, with especially with Flourish. We're creating a, I don't mean this to be a shameless plug here, but we are creating an adolescent group at the Murray office specifically for adolescent LGBTQ youth.
Oh, that's terrific.
Yeah.
And that's not a shameless plug at all. That's just sharing your information. So that's all right. Nicole, this is a question for you. I saw in your bio that you specialize in teens who feel stuck in cycles of anxiety or overthinking, or find themselves questioning their worth or patterns of feeling like not enough. I think that that's such a common thing right now with social media showing these highlight moments of people's lives. It makes a lot of us, not even just teenagers, feel like we're not enough or that we're not measuring up. If you have a teenager in your life who seems to be spiraling and just really questioning self-worth, even though you as a parent or a family member know they're a terrific kid, what are some strategies we could use to help them through those moments?
Yeah, you know, I think it's so tough because, like you're saying, with social media, we are presented with so many different lives of people, but it's just that highlight reel. And so I do find that working with a lot of teens, they have become more aware that it is a highlight reel. But I think just with the way that things are developing, kids are developing so much earlier, and so things are coming about much earlier in their lives. And I think sometimes for parents, that can be a little bit off-putting because it's just so different from their own experience potentially. And so opening up the conversation, I think, is the most important first step of, you know, if a child or teen feels comfortable talking to their parents, that is what I always try to encourage, especially in working with the teens. I think figuring out, you know, we all have insecurities. We all have things that we struggle with, and normalizing that. And then I think exploring where that comes from, you know, trying to find ways of self-acceptance, doing things that make you feel good about yourself. And I think that translates into, you know, any population really with any age. But I really do think opening up the conversation, the open communication with parents, is the most important piece of it. And hopefully, I know it can be hard because sometimes teens don't want to talk to their parents about what they're feeling, and I'm fine is kind of what comes up most times. But hopefully, you know, I do see a much stronger self-awareness in a lot of the teens that I work with these days.
I love to hear that. And, you know, for our last month's episode on resilient youth, we spoke with a woman who had written on this topic of this coming from a more optimistic place about our youth and what they are, that they are so much more self-aware now. And, you know, I don't know what it was like for you, Nicole, when you were an adolescent, but I know when I was, you didn't seek out therapy unless there was something really wrong. And it seems like today's youth, many, you know, lots and lot, like a greater percentage of them are seeking out therapy just to talk, like maybe our generation would go see a life coach now. And what does that mean for your practice?
Definitely. Yes. I have quite a few teens right now that their parents, you know, pushed them or said, I would really just like you to have somebody else to talk to in case there are things going on that you might feel shy or uncomfortable coming to us or me with. And, you know, it is interesting because I think in the beginning of this, as a therapist, we sometimes, or I'll say just for myself, I get into the habit of, okay, well, you're here. How can I help you? Like, what are the things we need to focus on? And it's really not quite so structured in that way. It really is just, hey, you're coming in. I'm somebody that can talk to you. You know, I've been there. I've been through this stuff. And we can maybe just work through some of the things that you're not going to talk to your parents about, this new person that you're talking to or texting, or how it makes you feel when it's really a weird dynamic too with cell phones and people taking videos and posting things online. It's the lack of privacy too is a huge issue that I've heard of recently. And so I think it just is nice for them to be able to talk to somebody with hopefully feeling not judged and just have the ability to share and have an open conversation.
So you are exclusively in the Park City office of Red Willow, is that right?
Yes.
And you are conveniently located right in the center of Prospector, right near the Freshy's Lobster. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the building just to the west, I think, of Freshy's.
It's just west, yes.
Yeah,
right west. There.
And well, James, maybe I can kick this to you. What was your decision surrounding opening a center here in Park City, and how's that been going for you?
It's been going really well. I'm trying to think how long we've been here in Park City. 8 years we've had an office open. And one thing that I do is I specialize a lot in working with addiction and families. And we have a lot of people in Park City with addiction. It's such a, you know, we talk about addiction as a family disease. Mm-hmm. Because of that, we ended up opening just a location in Park City to see how it went. And it's been great. And we continue to add more and more therapists up there. So we have quite a few therapists with all their specialties. So I love Park City. I love the people, the community. And I think that there's some very special challenges in Park City, especially with the youth. A lot of struggles with youth, identity, isolation, pressure, a lot of pressure more so than I think other communities. And then at the same time, you have a really tight-knit community, despite all the tourists, right? There's a very unique flavor for the people in, you know, Park City and their mental health needs.
When a family comes to you because they're teenagers in crisis, whether it's substance use or depression or something they can't even name, it seems like maybe some parents just want you to fix the kid, you know, make them feel better, make these problems disappear. But observing as a layperson, it seems like it's not usually just about the kid. How do you approach whether working with the individual teen or the whole family? How do you assess a situation like that?
I have an opinion on this because so I started my career in working with adolescents at Newport Academy, just over in Oakley, Utah. And so that's a residential facility for teens, you know, to come. And for those who don't know residential, that means, you know, usually they're coming from either inpatient, which is a hospital, or, you know, they're coming from a private practice that they just, the level of care isn't appropriate for their needs at that time. And so we would see kids coming in who, you know, ages 13 to 17. And yes, I think, you know, unfortunately, a lot of the time we would see these kids being dropped off and the parents saying, fix them. Like, something's wrong. I don't know what to do. Please, like, please help. But it's kind of their problem. And in that facility, one of the most important factors of the therapy was family therapy. We had a family therapist who worked specifically doing family work with the kid and the parents. And then we also had an individual therapist working with the kids. And then we would all come together as well. But I think it is so important because sometimes without even meaning to, you know, parents try their best. We always want to do our best for our kids. But sometimes things happen. Sometimes we get so frustrated and we can't help but say things that maybe are inappropriate, but that stick with our kids. And so sometimes really helping to repair these ruptures in the relationship is the most important factor in moving forward and reestablishing, you know, that secure attachment, secure base, so that the kids feel like they can come to you, come to the parents and talk to them about what's going on. And so, yeah, maybe it's not like, oh, we have to fix mom and dad and because they've completely messed up, but it's just repairing the relationship too, not solely focusing on the kid as the problem. Because when the kid feels like they're the problem, that's what's going to continue to present itself.
I bet sometimes it feels like pulling a thread, like there's so much going on at different levels with different members, and it's got to be a challenging thing. Well, Nicole, you mentioned earlier that privacy is a big concern for kids these days, and I get that, but it's also a concern for parents, because when a child seems to be closing off, or when you ask them what's wrong and they're clearly upset and they say, I don't want to talk about it, it makes you feel even more helpless and more concerned sometimes. Is there a good response to that, or whether behavioral or verbal response? Like, what should we do as a parent if our kid is upset and they don't want to talk about it?
I think on some level, you know, there are nuances to this, right? Depending on what's going on, if there's safety, self-harm being involved, that's kind of another conversation to have. If we're talking emotionally, if a kid is, frustrated and doesn't want to talk about what's going on in their life at that specific moment, I think, you can think about it in the sense of if somebody were to do this to you, sometimes we just need to take a moment to kind of sit in what's going on and process it a little bit. So I think allowing space sometimes is good. And though hopefully having the relationship in place in order to come back and say, I'm here if you need to talk to me, or asking, are you safe? Questions like that, just to kind of suss out what's going on. But I do think sometimes pushing, poking pushes people, kids in the opposite direction of feeling like, oh, I can come to you. It's more of a avoidance.
If you're just joining us on The Mountain Life, we're having a conversation with therapists James Ott and Nicole Small. They're therapists with Red Willow Counseling. That's redwillowcounseling.com. There's an office here in Park City and two offices in the Salt Lake Valley. James, you were talking about something a little bit ago about some special challenges that you see in Park City specifically, maybe, I don't know, if wider in Summit County. I guess I would ask, because my thought goes immediately to the problems of affluence, which doesn't seem like that would be a huge issue, but it, when we're talking about pressure to perform and things like that. And I just wondered if that's kind of what you're referring to, or, is that just an oversimplification? And could you expand on that?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. First off, Mary Beth was talking about, fix my kid. And I think that there is that mindset at times, but I also think a lot of times that mindset is about, I don't know what to do. When we were in high school, we have our courses, history and math and English. There's not a course on what to do if my family member has a drug addiction or is depressed or has suicidal thoughts. A lot of times families just don't know what to do. And so I think of a lot of the help that I do, or that I should say we do, a lot of it is just education and teaching and helping families to connect to each other, kind of like what Nicole was saying. How do we reconnect the family system? And I think part of the challenges of Park City as a community, there is the affluence, and that can create a lot of opportunity. That also creates a lot of demand for perfection as well as performance. Which is incredibly stressful for youth, for children and youth and adolescents. And in and of itself, that also can create a sense of isolation, this need to perform, or this need to say everything's okay. Affluence can also create a barrier to having natural consequences happen, which is how children learn, especially adolescence. Adolescence is about experimentation and screwing up and making really bad decisions. Again, kind of that learning how, when to step in and protect, and when is it a good idea to let some natural consequences happen so that our youth grow up smarter. So I think those are some of the specific challenges. It's kind of that they are unique to Summit County, and there is data that there's a higher risk of incidence of people attempting suicide, especially with the youth, and that's a huge concern. I think that's just a testament of the stress that the youth in Summit County are facing.
Right. And Nicole, maybe you could expand on that, especially having had this experience out at the residential facility in Oakley. And I guess that we've been talking for a long time about, this striving for perfection and parents putting that burden on their kids. And then we've been talking about social media for a long time. And I'm wondering, are we getting to a point where young people and their parents and the wider community is figuring it out? I would hope so. I would hope that we can sort of look in the rearview mirror and say, oh, remember back when we didn't know what to do with social media and it kind of ruined our lives? What are your thoughts on that?
No, I do think it is moving in the right direction. I think, like I said previously, I think there is a much greater awareness with teens now of, okay, this is fake. You know, this is a highlight reel. I understand what I'm looking at now, not just seeing these things and immediately going to comparison about what's not good about me and what's better about them. But I do think, I guess, kind of taking this in a different direction, I think there's a lot still of danger around certain platforms of social media as far as chat features. A lot of the times when I would hear kids getting into drugs or just engaging in kind of risky behaviors, it's, oh, I met this person on Snapchat, or I talked to this person on TikTok. And, you know, I think I'm truly actually not too familiar with the parental regulations on these apps, but I know that a lot of the kids get around them quite easily. And so I think for that, that is what I've seen as kind of the biggest issue still. With the actual comparison, that has greatly improved, but these risky behaviors are coming from chatting with somebody that you have no idea who they are.
I guess in kind of wrapping up a little bit, I'm wondering how do you know when a kid who is acting out or having some troubles, how do you know when this is just a phase and they're going to work it out themselves, or if this is a time to bring in some professional help, Nicole?
I don't know that there's a specific answer for that. Unfortunately, you know, you would hope that it is a phase. I think sometimes when we see a teen or adolescent's behavior, we immediately attribute it as a problem. This is something that's wrong. But I think the shift in thinking that's really important is what are they trying to communicate with this behavior? Are they having explosive anger? Like what is going on that's causing that versus, oh, they're bad and they're swearing at me and they're acting inappropriately. And it can be hard. You know, I know that's really hard to sometimes not get caught up in the moment, but I would say trying, like I said, to not look at the behavior as just a behavior,
I see.
asking what's going on.
That makes sense.
I
Please.
think it's, I feel really strongly about this, that we don't pathologize. I think we look at people and, you know, even parents and having high expectations on their kids, they just want them to succeed. You know, most of the time they just want them to have a good life and to be happy and succeed. So I'm always thinking, what are the needs here? What is the need for this family? What's this need for the parents? What are the needs for this adolescent or this young person? What needs that are creating these behaviors or these dysfunctions, or what are we really trying to accomplish, and how do we get them met in a healthy way?
Well, James, a minute ago you said something. I had to write it down because I think it might be the quote of the interview for me, is that adolescence is about experimentation and making really bad decisions. And the idea that like learning to face and navigate consequences is a part of life. You shouldn't go through life making no risks, making no bad decisions. It's part of the wild and crazy ride, which is growing up. And in this Live Like Sam related resilient youth series, we do like to highlight the fact that our youth are largely great and they're bringing so much energy and great stuff. Can you both just maybe share one thing that makes you hopeful about today's youth?
I'm going to say that the curiosity, the willingness to explore, and I think that stems from a desire to be me. Who am I? And I'm trying to explore who I am and what that really means, and what do I want to do? And you know, when youth have that sort of, they're on fire with that gives me a lot of hope.
Yeah, I definitely want to echo that. And I think that is really something that you see here in Park City too, with a lot of the youth. They have so many goals and so many things that they want to accomplish. And it is so amazing to see that they just don't want to be bystanders. They want to be active participants in the community. They want to help and they volunteer. And I think along with the social media thing, you know, they can use it for positive advantages of communicating and also sharing likes, dislikes, and things like that. So I definitely agree with that.
Well, those are wonderful thoughts. Thank you for sharing that.
Just to wrap up here, you know, if someone is listening to this interview now and is a parent and thinking, gosh, I really think that my kid could benefit from some therapy, some counseling, and I just don't know how to broach the topic because they're not really struggling with anything in particular, either one of you can just chime in and say what, you know, what we might say to our kid.
One thing I would say is I think a lot of times we're scared to say what we need to say. And so just simple words like, hey, I'm really concerned about you. You've seemed down lately, or I'm seeing a lot of stress in you, and I really worry and I care. And just a simple invitation. Would you like to talk to somebody about that? You know, and if they, whether they do or don't, I think also that expression of hope, like, hey, I believe you can get through this. And, you know, I believe in you. You can make it. So that kind of that, I care, this is what I'm seeing, an invitation to get help. And then that expression of hope and faith in the person themselves. I know you can do this. And there's a lot of people who support you. Let me know if you want to go talk to someone.
Thank you. And how about you, Nicole? You want to throw something else in there?
I think James pretty much covered it. I think that, you know, the invitation, and again, sometimes because a lot of the time as teens, they feel confined and like they don't have a voice. And so giving them the opportunity to make the choice for themselves is really important.
Great. Well, James Ott and Nicole Small of Red Willow Counseling and Recovery, thank you so much for joining us today on The Mountain Life. These are great words that we all need, whether we are a kid, a parent, a person in the community. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.